Yes.
Daniel's confidence took loose by surprise.
What happened to her neck?
We ran into some scale in Vienna.
Luce was hallucinating. She was not all right. Trembling, she met Stephen's eyes. They were steady, comforting.
You're all right. You have to be. For Daniel.
Stephen held open the door and led them inside. The small hut had a dirt floor and straw roof, a heap of blankets and rugs in one corner, a crude cooking stove near the fire, and a square of four rocking chairs in the center of the room. Standing in front of the chairs was Francesca, Stephen's wife, and the other Nephilim teacher at Shoreline. Phil and the other three outcasts stood alert along the opposite wall of the hut. Annabelle, Roland, Arian, Daniel, and Luce all crammed into the firelit warmth of the house.
"What now, Daniel?" Francesca asked, all business.
"Nothing," Daniel said quickly. "Nothing yet."
"Why not? Here they were on the fields of Troy, near the place where Lucifer was expected to land. They'd raced here to stop him. Why go through everything they'd gone through this week, just to sit around in a cabin and wait?"
"Daniel," Luce said, "I could use some explanation."
But Daniel only looked to Stephen.
"Please have a seat."
Stephen steered Luce to one of the rocking chairs. She sank into it and nodded thanks when he handed her a metal cup of spicy Turkish apple tea. He gestured around at the hut.
"It isn't much, but it keeps the rain and most of the wind out. And you know what they say? Location, location, location," Roland finished,
leaning on the arm of the rocking chair, where Arian had curled up across from Luce. Annabelle looked around at the rain, wailing on the window, at the cramped room.
"So this is the fall site? I mean, I can kind of feel it, but I don't know if that's because I'm trying so hard. This is weird."
Stephen was polishing his glasses on his fisherman's sweater. He slipped them back onto his nose, resuming his professorial tone.
"The fall site is very large, Annabelle. Think of the space required for 150,827,861...
"You mean 150,827,746, Francesca interrupted.
"Of course, there are discrepancies."
Stephen always humored his beautiful, combative wife.
"The point is, many angels fell, so the impact site is vast."
He glanced very quickly at Luce.
"But yes, you're sitting in a portion of the place where the angels fell to earth."
"We followed the old broad's map," Cam said,
poking at the fire in the stove. It had burned down to cinders, but his touch brought it roaring back to life.
"But I still wonder how we know for sure that this is it. There's not much time left. How do we know?"
"Because I'm seeing visions of it," Luce's mind suddenly screamed. "Because somehow I was there."
"I'm glad you asked."
Francesca spread a scroll of parchment on the floor between the rocking chairs. "The Nephilim Library at Shoreline has one map of the fall site. The map was drawn at so close a range that until someone could determine a geographical location, it could have been anywhere."
"It might as well have been an ant farm," Stephen added. "We've been awaiting Daniel's signal since Luce came back through the announcers, tracking your progress, trying to stay within reach for when you needed us."
"The outcasts found us at our winter home in Cairo, just after midnight."
Francesca drew her shoulders together, as if she were warding off a shudder.
"Luckily, this one had your pennon, or we might have..."
"His name is Philip. The outcasts are with us now," Daniel said.
It was strange that Phil had posed as a student at Shoreline for months, and Francesca didn't recognize him. Then again, the snobbish angel teacher paid attention only to the gifted students at the school.
"I had hoped you would be able to make it in time," Daniel said. "How were things at Shoreline when you left?"
"Not good," Francesca said.
Worse for you, I'm sure, but still not good for us. The scale came through shoreline on Monday.
Daniel's jaw clenched.
No.
Miles and Shelby, Luce gasped. Are they okay?
Your friends are all fine. They couldn't find anything to charge us with.
That's right, Stephen said proudly.
My wife runs a tight ship, above reproach.
Still, Francesca said, the students were very alarmed. Some of our biggest donors pulled their children from the school.
She paused.
I hope this is worth it.
Arion shot to her feet.
You bet your bangles it will be worth it.
Roland stood up quickly and tugged Arion back to her seat. Stephen took Francesca's arm and pulled her over to the window. Soon everyone was whispering, and Luce didn't have enough strength to hear more than Arian's loud.
I got her big donation right here.
Out the window, the slenderest band of russet light hugged the mountains. Luce stared at it, her stomach knotted, knowing it marked the sunrise of the eighth day, the last full day before... Daniel's hand was on her shoulder, warm and strong.
How are you doing there?
I'm fine.
She sat up straighter, feigning alertness.
What do we need to do next?
Sleep.
She straightened her shoulders.
No, I'm not tired. The sun's rising and Lucifer...
Daniel leaned over the rocking chair and kissed her forehead.
It will go better if you are rested.
Francesca looked up from her conversation with Stephen.
Do you think that's a good idea? If she's tired, she needs to sleep. A few hours won't hurt. We're already here.
But I'm not tired, she protested, though it was obvious she was lying.
Francesca swallowed.
I guess you were right. It's either going to happen or it's not.
What does she mean? Luce asked Daniel.
Nothing, he said softly.
Then, turning to Francesca, he said very quietly,
It's going to happen.
He lifted Luce, enough so he could slide into the rocking chair beside her. He wrapped his arms around her waist. The last things she felt were his kiss on her temple and his whisper in her ear.
Let her have one last sleep. Are you ready?
Luce stood beside Daniel in a fallow plot of farmland outside the White Hut. Mist rose from the soil, and the sky was a sharp blue color of a heavy storm's wake. There was snow in the hills to the east, but the sloping plains of the valley exuded spring-like warmth. Flowers bloomed on the fringes of the field. Butterflies were everywhere, white and pink and gold.
Yes.
Luce had been awake only an instant when she felt Daniel lift her from the rocking chair and out the door of the quiet hut. He must have held her in his arms all night.
Wait, she said. Ready for what?
The others were watching her, gathered in a circle as if they had been waiting, the angels and outcasts, all with their wings extended. A cloud of storks crossed the sky, their black-tipped wings spread wide as palm fronds. Their flight darkened the sun for a moment, casting shadows in the angels' wings before the birds moved on.
Tell me who I am, Daniel said plainly.
He was the only angel with his wings concealed inside his clothes. He stepped away from her, rolled back his shoulders, closed his eyes, and released his wings. They unfurled swiftly, with supreme elegance, blooming out on either side of him and sending back a gust of wind that swayed the boughs of the apricot trees. Daniel's wings towered over his body, radiant and wondrous, making him look unfathomably beautiful. He shone like a sun, not only his wings, but his whole body, and even more than that. What the angels called their glory radiated from Daniel. Luce couldn't take her eyes off him.
You're an angel.
He opened his violet eyes.
Tell me more.
You're Daniel Grigori, Luce continued.
You're the angel who has loved me for thousands of years. You're the boy I loved back from the moment... No, from every moment I first saw you.
She watched the sun play off the whiteness of his wings, yearned to feel them wrap around her.
You are the soul that fits into mine.
Good, Daniel said. Now, tell me who you are.
Well, I'm Lucinda Price. I'm the girl you fall in love with.
There was a tense stillness all around them. All the angels seemed to hold their breath. Daniel's violet eyes filled with tears. He whispered,
More.
Isn't that enough?
He shook his head.
Daniel?
Lucinda.
The way he said her name so gravely made her stomach ache. What did he want from her? She blinked, and it sounded like a thunderbolt, and then the Trojan plane went black like it had the night before.
The earth was marred by crooked fissures. Smoking craters stood where the field had been. Dust and ash and death were everywhere. The trees were on fire along the horizon, and a foul belch of rot rolled in on the wind. It was as if her soul had been hurled millennia back in time. There was no snow in the mountains, no tidy white hut before her, no circle of angels' worried faces. But there was Daniel. His wings shone through the dusty air. His bare skin was perfect, dewy, pink. His eyes glowed with the same intoxicating violet, but he wasn't looking at her. He was looking at the sky. He didn't seem to know that Luce was next to him. Before she could follow his gaze upward, the world began to swirl. The scent on the air changed from rot to arid dust. She was back in Egypt, in the dark tomb where she'd been locked away and almost lost her soul. That scene played out before her eyes, the star shot warm inside her dress, the panic clear on her past face, the kiss that brought her back, and Bill, flitting around the pharaoh's sarcophagus, already forming his most ambitious scheme. Her ears rang with his craggy laughter. And then the laughter was gone. The vision of Egypt morphed into another. A Lucinda from an even more distant past lay prone in a field of high flowers. She wore a deerskin dress and held a daisy over her face, picking off the petals one by one. The last one wobbled in the wind, and she thought, "He loves me." The sun was blinding until something crossed before it. Daniel's face, his eyes brimming violet love, his blonde hair sculpting a halo from the rays of the sun. He smiled. Then his face disappeared. A new vision, another life, the heat of a bonfire on her skin, desire burning in her chest. There were strange, loud music, people laughing, friends and family all around. Luce saw herself with Daniel, dancing wildly around the flames. She could feel the rhythms of the movements deep within her, even as the music faded and the flames licking the sky shifted from hot red to silvery softness. A waterfall. A long, lush drop of icy water down a limestone cliff. Luce was underneath it, parting a cloud of water lilies with her strokes. Her long, wet hair gathered around her shoulders as she rose above the water, then dipped below. She came up on the other side of the waterfall's torrent in a humid stone lagoon. And there was Daniel, waiting, as if he'd been waiting for her all his life. He dove from a rock, splashing her when his body struck the water. He swam toward her, drawing her to him, one arm around her back and the other cradled under her knees. She laced her hands around his neck and let him kiss her. She closed her eyes. Boom! The thunderbolt again. Luce was back on the smoking Trojan plain.
But this time, she was trapped in one of the craters, her body pinned beneath a boulder. She couldn't move her left arm or leg. She struggled, crying out, seeing spots of red and shards of something that looked like a broken mirror. Her head swirled with the most intense pain she had ever felt.
Help!
And then, Daniel hovering over her, his violet eyes roving her body in unblinking horror.
What happened to you?
Luce didn't know the answer, didn't know where she was or how she'd gotten there. The Lucinda of her memory didn't even recognize Daniel. But she did. Suddenly, she realized that this was the very first time she and Daniel had met on Earth. This was the moment she'd been begging for, the moment Daniel would never talk about. Neither recognized the other. They were already, instantly, in love. How could this be the place of their first meeting? This plagued dark landscape reeked of filth and death. Her past self looked beaten, bloodied, like she'd been shattered into a thousand pieces, like she had fallen from an unfathomable height. Luce glanced at the sky. Something was there, a mass of infinitesimal sparks, as though heaven had been electrocuted and shockwaves would ripple from it for the rest of time. Except the sparks were drawing nearer. Dark forms, limned with light, tumbled from an infinity above. There must have been a million of them gathered in a chaotic, amorphous band across the sky, dark and light, suspended and falling simultaneously, as if beyond the reach of gravity. Had Luce been up there? She felt almost as if she had. Then she realized something. Those were the angels. This was the fall. The memory of witnessing their fall to Earth agonized Luce. It was like watching all the stars fall out of the night sky. The farther they fell, the looser their aimless formation became. Single entities became visible, autonomous. She couldn't imagine any of her angels, her friends, ever looking like this. More lost and out of control than the most destitute mortal on the worst day of his life. Was Arian among them? Was Cam? Her gaze traced one orb of light directly overhead. It grew larger and brighter as it approached. Daniel looked up, too. Luce realized he didn't recognize the falling forms either. His impact on Earth had shuddered through him so thoroughly that it had erased his memory of who he was, where he'd come from, how magnificent he used to be. He watched the sky with raw terror in his eyes. A smattering of falling angels were hundreds of feet above their heads 1 second, then close enough that Luce could make out the strange dark bodies within their vessels of light. The bodies did not move, but seemed undeniably alive. Closer they fell, bearing down on Luce until she screamed, and the great mass of dark and light crashed into the field beside her. An explosion of fire and black smoke knocked Daniel out of Luce's sight. More were coming. Over 1 million more were coming. They would pummel the earth and every living thing on it to a pulp. Luce ducked and shielded her eyes and opened her mouth to scream again. But the sound that came out was no scream, because the memory had shifted into something even further back. Further back than the fall? Luce was no longer in the field of smoking craters and meteoric angels. She was standing in a landscape of pure light. Any terror in her voice did not belong here, could not have existed in this place, which she knew and did not know. She had a sense of where she was, but it couldn't possibly be real. Streaming from her soul was a strong, rich chord of music, so beautiful that it turned everything around her white. The crater was gone. The earth was gone. Her body was... She didn't know. She couldn't see it. She couldn't see anything but this fantastic silver-tinged white glow. The brightness unfolded like a package until Luce could make out a vast white meadow spread out before her. Splendid groves of white trees lined either side of the field. In the distance was a rippling silver ledge. Luce sensed it was important. Then she saw that there were 7 more of them, forming a grand arch in the air, around something so bright Luce couldn't stand to look at it. She focused on the ledge, the 3rd one from the left. She could not wrest her gaze from it. Why? Because, her memory reeled back, because this ledge belonged to her. Long before, she used to sit here, next to whom? It seemed to matter. Her vision swirled and faded, and the silver ledge dissolved. The remaining whiteness focused, separating into shapes, into faces, bodies, wings, a backdrop of blue sky. This was not a memory. She was back in the present, her real and final life. Around her stood her teachers, Francesca and Stephen, her allies, the outcasts, her friends, Roland, Arian, Annabelle, and Cam, and her love, Daniel. She stared at each one of them, and she found them so beautiful. They were watching her with dumb joy on their faces. They were also crying. The gift of self-knowledge, Dia told her. You must remember how to dream what you already know. All this had been within her the whole time, in every instant of her every life. Yet only now did Luce feel awake beyond her capacity to imagine what it meant to be awake. A light wind blew across her skin, and she could feel the distant sea carried on it from the Mediterranean, telling her she was still in Troy. Her vision, too, was clearer than it had ever been before. She saw brilliant dots of pigment making up the wings of a passing golden butterfly. She breathed in the cold air, filling her lungs, smelling the zinc in the loamy soil that would make it fertile in the spring. "I was there," she whispered. "I was in heaven." But she couldn't say it. She knew too much to deny it, and yet not enough to speak the words. Daniel, he would help her. "Go on," his eyes were pleading. Where did she begin? She touched the locket with the picture taken when she and Daniel had lived in Milan. "When I visited my past life in Helston," she began, "I learned that our love ran deeper than who we were in any single lifetime."
"Yes," Daniel said. "Our love transcends everything."
"And when I visited Tibet, I learned that a single touch or kiss was not the trigger to my curse."
"Not touch,"
Roland's voice. He was smiling, standing next to Daniel with his hands clasped behind his back.
"Not touch, but self-awareness. A level you weren't ready for until now."
"Yes," Luce touched her forehead. "There was more, so much more." "Versailles," she began to speak more quickly. "I was condemned to marry a man I didn't love, and your kiss released me, and my death was glorious because we would always find each other again, forever."
"Together, forever, whatever the weather," Arian chimed in, swiping damp eyes on Roland's shirt sleeve. By now, Luce's throat felt so tight it was difficult to speak. But it was no longer sore.
"I didn't realize until London that your curse was so much worse than mine," she said to Daniel. "What you had to go through, losing me."
"It never mattered," Annabelle murmured,
her wings buzzing so much that her feet were inches off the ground.
"He would always wait for you."
"Chichen Itza," Luce closed her eyes.
I learned that an angel's glory could be deadly to mortals.
Yes, Stephen said, but you are still here.
Keep going, Luce.
Francesca's voice was more encouraging than it had ever been at Shoreline.
Ancient China, she paused. This one's significance was different from the others. You showed me that our love was more important than any arbitrary war.
No one spoke. Daniel gave the faintest nod.
And that was when Luce understood, not just who she was, but what it all added up to. There was another lifetime from her voyage through the announcers that Luce felt she had to mention. She took a breath.
Don't think of Bill, she told herself. You are not afraid.
When I was locked in the tomb in Egypt, I knew once and for all that I would always choose your love.
That was when the angels dropped to one knee, gazing up at her expectantly, all of them except Daniel. His eyes glowed the most potent shade of violet she had ever seen. He reached for her, but before his hands met hers,
"Ah!"
Luce cried out as a sharp pain sliced through her back. Her body convulsed with a foreign, piercing sensation. Her eyes teared. Her ears rang. She thought she might be sick from the pain. But slowly it localized from an acute agony all over her back into two small sections at the tops of her shoulder blades. Was she bleeding? She reached back over her shoulder. The wound felt tender and raw, and also as if something were being drawn out from within her. It didn't hurt, but it was bewildering. Panicked, she whirled her head around, but she could see nothing, could only hear the sound of skin sliding and being stretched, the thrrrp that sounded like new muscles were being generated. Then came a sudden feeling of heaviness, as if weights had been strapped around her shoulders. And then, in her peripheral vision, vast billowing whiteness on either side of her, as a collective gasp rose from the angel's lips.
"Oh, Lucinda," Daniel whispered, his hand covering his mouth.
It was this easy. She spread her wings. They were luminous, buoyant, impossibly light, made of the finest, most reflective Empyrean matter. From tip to tip, her wingspan was maybe 30 feet, but they felt vast, endless. She felt no more pain. When her fingers curled around the base of them behind her shoulders, they were several inches thick and plush. They were silver, yet not silver, like the surface of a mirror. They were inconceivable. They were inevitable. They were her wings. They contained every ounce of strength and empowerment she had amassed over the millennia she had lived. And at the slightest whim of a thought, her wings began to beat. Her first thought, "I can do anything now." Wordlessly, she and Daniel reached for one another's hands. Their wings' top edges arched forward in a kind of kiss, like the angel's wings in the Chaim Malak. They were crying and laughing, and soon they were kissing.
"So?" he asked.
She was stunned and amazed and happier than she'd ever been before. It couldn't possibly be real, she thought, unless she spoke the truth aloud, with Daniel and the rest of the fallen angels there to witness. "I'm Lucinda," she said. "I'm your angel."
17. The Invention of Love. Flying was like swimming, and Luce was good at both. Her feet lifted off the ground. It took no thought or preparation. Her wings beat with sudden intuition. Wind hummed against the fibers of her wings, carrying her in the gauzy pink sky. Aloft, she felt the weight of her body, especially in her feet,
but overpowering that was a new, unimaginable buoyancy. She slid over low tiers of clouds, causing the slightest disruption, like a breeze passing through a chime. She gazed from one wingtip to the other, examining their silver-pearl luster, in awe of all her changes. It was as if the rest of her body deferred to her wings now. They responded at the first inkling of desire with elegant strokes that generated tremendous velocity. They flattened like an airfoil to glide solely on momentum, then pulled back into a heart shape behind her shoulders as she swizzled straight into the air. Her first flight. Except it wasn't. What Luce knew now, as keenly as her wings knew how to fly, was that there had been a monumental before. Before Lucinda Price, before her soul had ever seen the curving Earth. For all the lives on Earth she'd witnessed in the announcers, all the bodies she had inhabited, Luce had barely scratched the surface of who she was, who she had been. There was a history, older than history, during which she'd beat these wings. She could see the others watching her from the ground. Daniel's face shone with tears. He had known this all along. He had waited for her. She wanted to reach him, wanted him to soar up and fly with her. But then, suddenly, she couldn't see him anymore. The light gave way to the total darkness of another memory crashing through. She closed her eyes and surrendered to it, letting it carry her back. Somehow she knew that this was the earliest memory, the moment at the furthest reaches of her soul. Lucinda had been there from the beginning of the beginning. The Bible had left this part out. Before there was light, there were angels. One moment, darkness. The next, the warm feeling of being coaxed out of inexistence by a gentle, magnificent hand. God created the heavenly host of angels, all 318 million of them, in a single brilliant moment. Lucinda was there, and Daniel, and Roland, and Annabelle, and Cam, and millions more, all perfect, all glorious, all designed to adore their Creator. Their bodies were made of the same substance that composed the firmament of heaven. They were not flesh and blood, but imperial matter, the stuff of light itself, strong, indestructible, beautiful to behold. Their shoulders, arms, and legs shimmered into being, foreshadowing the shapes mortals would take upon their own creation. The angels all discovered their wings simultaneously, each pair slightly different, reflecting the soul of its possessor. As early as the angel's genesis, Lucinda's wings were bright, reflective silver, the color of starlight. They had shone in their singular glory since the dawn of time. Creation occurred at the speed of God's will, but it unfolded in Luce's memory like a story, another of God's earliest creations, a byproduct of time. One moment there was nothing. Then heaven was replete with angels. In those days, heaven was limitless, its ground covered by cloud soil, a soft, white substance like misty cloud that covered the angels' feet and wingtips when they walked along the ground. There were endless tiers in heaven, each level teeming with alcoves and winding paths, fanning out in all directions under a honey-colored sky. The air was perfumed with nectar, welling in delicate white flowers, springing up in delightful groves. Their round blooms dotted all of heaven's nooks and crannies, looking something like ancestors of white peonies. Orchards of silver trees bore the most delicious fruits that had ever existed. The angels feasted and gave thanks for their first and only home. Their voices joined together in praise of their Creator, forming a blended sound that in humans' throats would later be known as harmony. A meadow rolled into existence, dividing the orchard in two.
And when everything else in heaven was complete, God placed a stunning throne at the head of the meadow. It pulsed with divine light.
"Come before me," God commanded, settling into the deep seat with deserved satisfaction. "Henceforth, you will know me as the throne."
The angels gathered on the plain of heaven and approached the throne in gladness. They flowed naturally into a single line, ranking themselves instantly and forevermore. By the time they neared the edge of the meadow, Lucinda remembered that she could not clearly see the throne. It shone too brightly for angels' eyes to withstand. She also remembered that she had once been the third angel in line, the third angel closest to God. 1, 2, 3. Her wings stretched and thickened with the honor. In the air over the throne, 8 ledges made of rippled silver hung in an arch, like a canopy sheltering the throne. God called the first 8 angels in the line to fill these seats and become the throne's archangels. Lucinda took her place on the 3rd seat from the left. It fit her body precisely, having been created just for her. This was where she belonged. Adoration poured from her soul, flowing to God. It was perfect. It did not last. God had more plans for the universe. Another memory filled Lucinda, causing her to shiver. God left the angels. All was joyful in the meadow, and then the throne became empty. God walked past the thresholds of heaven, went away to create the stars and the earth and the moon. Man and woman hovered near the brink of existence. Heaven dimmed when God left it. Lucinda felt cold and useless. It was then, she remembered, that the angels began to see one another differently, to notice the variations in color among their wings. Some began to gossip that God had wearied of them and their harmonizing songs of praise. Some said that humans would soon take the angels' place. Lucinda remembered reclining in her silver seat next to the throne. She remembered noticing how simple and dull it looked without God's animating presence. She tried to adore her Creator from afar, but she couldn't replace her loneliness. Adoration in God's presence was what she had been designed for, and all she felt now was a hole. What could she do? She looked down from her chair and saw an angel roaming the cloud soil. He looked lethargic, melancholy. He seemed to feel her gaze on him and looked up. When their eyes met, he smiled. She remembered how beautiful he'd been before God had gone away. They did not think. They reached for one another. Their souls entwined. Daniel, Luce thought. But she couldn't be sure. The meadow had been dim, and her memory was foggy. Was this the moment of their first connection? Flash! The meadow was bright white again. Time had passed. God had returned. The throne blazed with sublime glory. Lucinda no longer sat upon her rippling silver chair beside the throne. She was crammed into the meadow with a full host of angels being asked to choose something. The roll call. Lucinda had been there, too. Of course she had. She felt hot and nervous, without knowing why. Her body flushed, the way it used to when she was inside a past self and on the brink of dying. She could not still her trembling wings. She had chosen. Her stomach dropped. The air felt thin. She was falling. Luce blinked and saw the sun clipping the mountains, and she knew that she was back in the present, back in Troy. And falling from the sky, 20 feet, 40, her arms flailed, as if she were a mere girl again, as if she couldn't fly. She spread her wings, but it was too late. She landed with a soft thump in Daniel's arms. Her friends surrounded her on the grassy plain. Everything was just as it had been before. Flat-topped cedar trees around a muddy, fallow farm. Abandoned hut in the middle of barren expanse. Purple hills, butterflies. Faces of fallen angels watching over her, filled with concern.
"Are you all right?" Daniel asked.
Her heart was still racing. Why couldn't she remember what had happened at the roll call? Maybe it wouldn't help them stop Lucifer, but Luce desperately wanted to know.
"I came so close," she said. "I almost understood what happened."
Daniel set her softly on the ground and kissed her.
"You'll get there, Luce. I know you will."
It was dusk on the eighth day of their journey. As the sun slipped over the Dardanelles, casting gold light on the sloping, fallow fields, Luce wished there was a way to draw it backward. What if one day wasn't enough time? Luce hunched and unhunched her shoulders. She wasn't used to the weight of her wings, light as rose petals in the sky, but heavy as lead curtains when her feet were on the ground. When her wings first unfurled, they'd torn through her t-shirt and the khaki army jacket. The clothes lay on the grass in shreds. Strange proof. Annabelle had quickly emerged from the hut with an extra t-shirt. It was electric blue, with a silk-screened image of Marlena Dietrich on the chest, subtle wing slits tailored into the back.
"Instead of thinking of all that you don't yet remember," Francesca said, "recognize what you have come to know."
"Well," Luce paced the meadow, feeling the new sensation of her wings bobbing behind her. "I know that the curse prevented me from knowing my true nature as an angel, caused me to die whenever I began to approach a memory of my past. That's why none of you could tell me who I was."
"You had to walk that lonesome valley by yourself," Cam said. "And the reason it took you until this lifetime was also part of your curse," Daniel said.
"This time I was raised without one specific religion, without a single set of rules determining my destiny, which allows me to..." Luce paused, thinking back to the roll call. "Choose for myself."
"Not everyone has that luxury,"
Phil spoke up from the line of outcasts.
"That's why the outcasts wanted me?" she asked, knowing suddenly it was true. "But haven't I already chosen Daniel? I couldn't remember before, but when Dee gave me her gift of knowledge, it seemed like..."
She reached for Daniel. "The choice was always already there inside of me."
"You know who you are now, Luce," Daniel said. "You know what matters to you. Nothing should be beyond your grasp."
Daniel's words seeped into her. This was what she was now. It was what she always had been. Her gaze moved to where the outcast stood at a distance from the group. Luce didn't know how much they could have seen of her transformation, whether their blind eyes could perceive a soul's metamorphosis. She watched for a sign in Oleana, the female outcast who'd guarded Luce on the rooftop in Vienna. But as she stared at Oleana, she realized Oleana had also changed.
"I remember you," Luce said, walking closer to the thin blonde girl with the cavernous white eyes. She knew her from heaven.
"Oleana, you were one of the 12 angels of the Zodiac. You ruled over Leo." Oleana took a deep, shuddering breath and nodded.
"Yes."
"And you, Freesia, you were a luminary." Luce closed her eyes, remembering. "Weren't you one of the four who emanated from divine will? I remember your wings. They were..." She halted, feeling her expression darken at the sight of the drab brown wings the girl bore now.
"Exceptional."
Freesia straightened her slumped shoulders, raised her pale, gaunt face. "No one has truly seen me in ages." Vincent, the youngest looking of the outcasts, stepped forward.
And me, Lucinda Price? Do you remember me?
Luce reached out and touched the boy's shoulder, remembering how deathly sick he'd looked after the scale had tortured him. Then she remembered something deeper than that.
You are Vincent, Angel of the North Wind.
Vincent's blind eyes clouded, as if his soul wanted to cry, but his body refused.
Phil, Luce said, gazing finally at the outcast she'd feared so much when he came for her in her parents' backyard.
His lips were taut and white, nervous.
One of Monday's angels, weren't you? Instilled with the powers of the moon.
Thank you, Lucinda Price.
Phil bowed haltingly, but graciously.
The outcasts confess we were wrong to try to take you away from your soulmate and your obligations, but we knew, as you have just proven, that you alone could see us for who we used to be, and that you alone could restore us to our glory.
Yes, she said. I can see you.
The outcasts can see you too, Phil said. You are radiant. Yes, she is.
Daniel.
She turned to him. His blonde hair and violet eyes, the strong cut of his shoulders, the full lips that had brought her back to life 1,000 times. They had loved each other, even longer than Luce had realized. Their love had been strong since the early days of heaven. Their relationship spanned the entire story of existence. She knew where she'd first met Daniel on Earth, right here, on the singed fields of Troy, while the angels were falling. But there was an earlier story, a different beginning to their love. When? How had it happened? She searched for the answer in his eyes, but she knew she wouldn't find it there. She had to look back in her own soul. She closed her eyes. The memories came easier now, as if her spreading wings had sent a web of fissures breaking through the wall between the girl, Lucinda, and the angel she had been before. Whatever separated her from her past was fragile now, as thin and brittle as an eggshell. Flash! Back on the meadow, astride her silver ledge, aching for God to return. Luce was looking down at the fair-haired angel, the one she'd already remembered reaching for. She remembered his slow, sad steps on the cloud soil, the crown of his head before he looked up. Heaven was quiet then. Luce and the angel were alone for a rare moment, away from the harmony of others. He turned to look up at Lucinda. He had a square face, wavy amber hair, and blue eyes the color of ice. They crinkled when he smiled at her. She did not recognize him. No, that wasn't it. She recognized him, knew him. Long before, Lucinda had loved this angel. But he wasn't Daniel. Without knowing why, Luce wanted to spin away from this memory, to pretend she hadn't seen it, to blink back and be with Daniel on the rocky plains of Troy. But her soul was welded to the scene. She could not turn away from this angel who was not Daniel. He reached for her, their wings entwined. He whispered in her ear,
"Our love is endless. There can be nothing else."
No!
At last, she jolted herself from the memory. Back at Troy, out of breath. Her eyes must have betrayed her. She felt wild and panicked.
"What did you see?" Annabelle whispered.
Luce's mouth opened, but no words came.
"I betrayed him, whoever he was. There was someone before Daniel, and I..."
"It's not over yet."
Finally, she found her voice.
"The curse. Even though I know who I am, and I know that I choose Daniel, there's something else, isn't there? Someone else. He's the one who cursed me."
Daniel ran his fingers very lightly over the shining border of her wings. She shivered because every touch against her wings burned with the passion of a deep kiss and ignited something deep inside her. Finally, she knew the pleasure she brought to him when she let her hands glide over his.
"You've come so very far, Lucinda, but there is still a ways to go. Search your past. You already know what you are looking for. Find it."
She closed her eyes, searching again through millennia of fraught memories. The earth drew away beneath her feet. A maze of colors blurred around her, and her heart hammered in her chest, and everything went white. Heaven again. It was bright with God's return to the throne. The sky shone the color of an opal. The cloud soil was thick that day, tufts of white reaching nearly to the angels' waists. Those towering white spires to the right were trees in the grove of life. The silvery blossoms in full bloom to the left would soon bear the fruits of the orchard of knowledge. The trees were taller now. They'd had time to grow since Luce's last recollection. She was back in the meadow, in the center of a great, flickering congregation of light. The angels in heaven were gathered before the throne, which was restored to a brightness so intense Lucinda cringed to look at it. The silver ledge that had once been Lucifer's had now been moved to the far end of the meadow. It had been lowered to an insulting level by the throne. Between Lucifer and the throne, the rest of the angels were united in a single mass. But soon, Lucinda realized, they would be partitioned off to one side or the other. She was back at the roll call. This time, she would force herself to remember how it went. Every son and every daughter of heaven would be asked to choose a side. God or Lucifer. Good or... No, he wasn't evil. Evil didn't exist yet. Crowded together like that, every angel was stunning, distinct, but somehow indistinguishable from the next. There was Daniel in the center, the purest glow she would ever know. In her memory, Lucinda was moving toward him. Moving from where? Daniel's voice filled her ears.
Search your past.
She hadn't looked at Lucifer yet. She didn't want to.
Look where you do not want to look.
When she turned to the far end of the meadow, she saw the light around Lucifer. It was splendid and ostentatious, as if he sought to compete with everything in the meadow, the orchard, the heavenly hum, the throne itself. Lucinda had to focus hard to see him clearly. He was lovely. Amber hair spilled down his shoulders in shiny waves. His body seemed grander, defined by muscle no mortal would ever achieve. His cold blue eyes were mesmerizing. Lucinda couldn't take her eyes off him. Then, between bars of the heavenly hum, she heard it. Though she didn't remember learning the song, she knew the words and would always know them, the way mortals carried nursery rhymes through their lives. Of all the pairs the throne endorsed, none rose to burn as bright as Lucifer, the morning star, and Lucinda, his evening light. The lines echoed in her head, drawing memory to them, recollection raining down with every word. Lucinda, his evening light? Lucinda's soul crawled, sickened toward a realization. Lucifer had written this song. It was a part of his design. She was... Had she been Lucifer's lover? The moment she wondered whether that horror was possible, Luce knew it was the oldest, coldest truth. She had been wrong about everything. Her first love had been Lucifer, and Lucifer had been hers. Even their names were paired. Once they had been soulmates.
She felt twisted, foreign to herself, as if she'd awakened to realize she had killed someone in her sleep. Across the meadow, Lucinda and Lucifer locked eyes at the roll call. Hers widened in disbelief as his crinkled up in an inscrutable smile. Flash. A memory inside a memory. Luce tunneled even further through the darkness to the place where she most loathed to go. Lucifer held her, his wings caressing hers, creating unmentionable pleasure, openly, there on her silver seat, around the empty throne. Our love is endless. There can be nothing else. When he kissed her, Lucinda and Lucifer became the first beings to experiment with affection beyond God. The kisses had been strange and wonderful, and Lucinda had wanted more, but she feared what the other angels would think of Lucifer's kisses on her. She worried that his kiss would look like a brand on her lips. Most of all, she feared God would know when God returned and resumed the title of the throne.
"Say you adore me," Lucifer begged.
"Adoration is for God," Lucinda replied.
"It doesn't have to be," Lucifer whispered. "Imagine how strong we'd be if we could openly declare our love before the throne. You adoring me adoring you. The throne is only one. United in love, we could be greater."
What's the difference between love and adoration? Lucinda asked.
Love is taking the adoration you feel for God and giving it to somebody actually here.
But I don't want to be greater than God. Lucifer's face darkened at her words. He spun away from her, rage taking root in his soul. Lucinda sensed a strange change within him, but it was so foreign she didn't recognize it. She began to fear him. He seemed to fear nothing, except her ever leaving him. He taught her the song about the greatness of their union. He made her sing it constantly, until Lucinda saw herself as Lucifer's evening light. He told Lucinda this was love. Luce writhed with the pain of the memory. It went on and on like that with Lucifer. With every interaction, every caress of Lucinda's wings, he grew more possessive, more envious of her adoration of the throne, telling Lucinda that if she truly loved him, Lucifer would be enough. There was one day she remembered during that dark period. She'd been weeping in the meadow, up to her neck in cloud soil, wanting to sink away from everything. An angel's shadow hovered over her. "Leave me alone," she had cried. But the wing that draped over hers did the opposite. It cradled her. The angel seemed to know what she needed better than she knew herself. Slowly, Lucinda lifted her head. The angel's eyes were violet. "Daniel." She knew him as the sixth archangel, charged with watching over lost souls. "Why have you come to me?"
"Because I have been watching you."
Daniel stared, and Luce knew that before then, no one had ever seen an angel cry. Lucinda's tears were the first.
"What is happening to you?"
For a long time, she searched for the words. "I feel like I'm losing my light." The story poured out of her, and Daniel let it come. No one had listened to Lucinda in a very long time. When she finished, Daniel's eyes were wet with tears.
"What you call love does not sound very beautiful," he said slowly. "Think of the way we adore the throne. That adoration makes us the best versions of ourselves. We feel encouraged to go further with our instincts, not to change ourselves for love. If I were yours and you were mine, I would want you to be exactly as you are. I would never eclipse you with my desires."
Lucinda took Daniel's warm, strong hand. Maybe Lucifer had discovered love,
but this angel seemed to understand how to build it into something wonderful. Suddenly, Lucinda was kissing Daniel, showing him how it was done, needing for the first time to give her soul entirely to another. They held each other, Daniel's and Lucinda's souls glowing brighter.